Something really interesting is revealing itself in the United States. Never before seen videos of Lindsey Graham before he died. And the story it tells is kind of the shameful way in which he lived. It's part of the stories that you need to know about today.
And then today you essentially added, if not wanting to be blown up, stabbed, or rammed by a car, by a radical Islamist in the United States of America makes us Islamophobes, then so be it.
Even though it's a huge landmass, their economic production is pitiful. It's pitiful. Because communism sucks.
He loves blowing stuff up. Look what we've done here.
I know.
I almost cried.
Yeah. Hello.
Hey, baby, Lindsey.
Hey, Lindsey. How are you?
I'm just so impressed. Glad to be your friend.
Yeah, note to the guy who said that Russia's a communist country. Russia's not a communist country. Note to Lindsey Graham, even after his passing, you didn't work for Israel. You were supposed to work for America. The effect is next. Let's do this. Hi, everybody. I'm Rick Sanchez. So glad you're there. Millions of you have by now probably watched or will watch my conversation that I had yesterday with Tucker Carlson. It's created a lot of palaver. And what came out of it was, you know, in many ways, a sad commentary between two Americans having a discussion on why, despite all of America's virtues, and there are many, many virtues in America, no doubt, of course, stuff to be proud of. Right now, it's a country suffering from a potentially fatal flaw. And you know what that flaw is? Stupidity. Just plain stupidity. Let me just say it straight out. Based on my work now, covering news, as I travel around the world, small countries, poor countries, rich countries, big countries, little countries, I have come to the conclusion that we Americans are up there possibly as the dumbest people on the planet. We know nothing. I mean, nothing about the rest of the world. And it's not our fault. It's exactly how the people who run our country, who run America, want us to be dumb. Because it serves their interest. Why would it serve their interest? Well, you see, it's very simple. Dumb people don't ask questions. Dumb people certainly don't ask good questions. Because they don't have the information. Instead, they buy into mental slop like this from none other than a member of the U.S. Congress who literally just comes out and says and wants you to believe, needs you to believe, I'll explain more on that in a minute, needs you to believe that not that all Muslims, not some Muslims, all Muslims are bad people.
I want to ask you about something you posted online. A few days ago, you wrote, quote, "Every single Muslim holding public office in America is a Trojan horse and a threat to both national security and our republic." And then today, you essentially added, "If not wanting to be blown up, stabbed, or rammed by a car, by a radical Islamist in the United States of America makes us Islamophobes, then so be it." Are you saying that anyone who is Muslim is a threat to this country?
That's not what I said, and that's not what I said.
That's exactly what you said. It's exactly what you said. And why did she say it? Because this is what we really have to look at sometimes. We're talking about why people are made dumb. Well, because what she said is really an Israeli talking point, right? Israel needs Americans, America, to hate Muslims. And they tend to believe, and to tend to believe that they're all somehow radical killers, right? Why? So America and Americans will then support wars against Muslim countries that Israel wants to take over as its Greater Israel project. So then the next question, right? Why would Nancy Mace, right? Not Grace, Nancy Mace promote that hate? Yeah, that's another story. Why? Why would she do that? Why would she say that? It's simple. She is funded by Israel. Ta-da! Yeah. She gets her campaign money from AIPAC, or the majority of it. And if she doesn't say that, if she doesn't do their bidding, they will then find somebody else and replace her with somebody else who will do or say that, their bidding. Here's another case. This is the case of a guy named Dave Ramsey, all right? Guy barely has a college degree. His business background includes that he basically bankrupted a real estate company. But yet he is the guy who tens and tens of millions of Americans turn to every night for their wisdom, their knowledge, their financial wisdom, if nothing else. So I want to give you an example of the kind of stuff he says, right? This is a question that he gets. He does this little thing where he has people send him questions. And this is a question he gets from one of his, followers. Listen.
Today's question comes from Zach in Alabama. He asks, I'm reading more and more about de-dollarization and countries moving away from the U.S. dollar as their basis of international trade. Will this affect the strength of the dollar? And should I be concerned about how I'm saving and investing as a result of this?
Yeah, so there's this thing in the BRICS countries that they're now forming their own currency because they're tired of getting screwed by the West. So it's a great question, by the way. And it's a question that involves a lot of nuance, right? Not for Ramsey. He goes on to tell this investor who's calling him from Alabama that he has nothing to worry about. Because you see, Mr. Investor, countries like China and India, and in particular, Russia, they're nothing compared to the United States. Here's how he puts it on Russia.
When you look at the math, it's humorous. I mean, and Russia, we always think of as like, you know, in the Rocky movies or something, like they're going to come bomb the United States or whatever and all this stuff. But they're, when you look at their, even though it's a huge landmass, their economic production is pitiful. It's pitiful because communism sucks. And so it just doesn't create a lot of gross domestic product.
It's like inviting your drunk neighbor over to a backyard barbecue and he starts telling you all about the world, right? Though he knows nothing. Again, tens of millions of people get their news and their information from this guy. This guy has a business show on Fox News, right? Yeah, that guy right there, who apparently doesn't know that the Soviet Union dissolved in the 1990s and that Russia is no longer a communist country. Here he is talking about, communism doesn't work. I mean, to be fair, he did make those comments a few years ago, but it doesn't matter. Right? Even with barely a college degree and no apparent knowledge of global politics or global economies, you'd think, if nothing else, he could at least look it up. Man, there it is. Go on your MacBook Pro or whatever the hell you have. Go on your laptop, on your phone, right? And you'll find out with one or two clicks that Russia has now been a constitutional republic, newly founded around democratic principles since 1993, when they decided to do that. There's more capitalism in Russia than there is in most Western countries these days. So, and what else did he say about Russia? Let's continue.
And so it just doesn't create a lot of gross domestic product.
I looked that one up too. I just wanted to be sure. Actually, Russia has a higher gross domestic product that most countries in Europe that he advises his investors to put their money in. And again, all it takes is a little simple Google search. Go to Mr. Google's and you find out, here it is. Let me put it up for you. This is from the International Monetary Fund, no friend of Russia, the IMF, right? Russia has the fourth highest GDP in the world. It is higher than Japan. It is higher than Germany. Higher than France, higher than the UK, higher than Italy. Oh, my God, I didn't know that. Well, now you do. You would know that if you didn't listen to stooges like this. By the way, when it comes to GDP growth, Russia right now is kicking the behind of most European countries. It's outpacing Japan. It's outpacing the UK and France and Germany and Italy. So what was that again? This little, poor, pitiful country, communist, damn communist, with no domestic product. By the way, there's another important development regarding this story, and it's this, because if you want to talk about things that are going on that are important trends, apparently Russia is now on the cusp of developing its own cross-country payment system to bypass SWIFT. You know what SWIFT is. It's the system that was devised by the United States and other Western countries that uses the dollar to exclusively trade or make exchanges between banks, right?
If you're in one country, you want to send money to another country, you've got to use the SWIFT system. Well, Russia's already implemented a cross-border payment network similar to SWIFT. It's called PSB. It does pretty much the same thing that SWIFT does. There it is. It's an article in RT, right? They launched it about 2 years ago, as a matter of fact, and already it services thousands and thousands of transactions on a daily basis. In fact, 20% of all the trade deals that are done are now used, are now done using PSB. But now officials say that they're going to grow PSB into a much larger, a more comprehensive system that'll probably involve the Chinese and Iran and, of course, India as well. Expect it. Then there is this. Boy, did this catch my eye today when I was scouring for interesting news. Some new videos out. New videos of a documentary about Lindsey Graham. And these videos that are just coming out, and there are probably going to be more coming out, tell kind of what I think is a disturbing story about him, about how the war against Iran was planned and prosecuted in some ways by him. Watch his reaction, first of all, on this first videotape I'm going to show you. This is him the moment he learns that the United States has started bombing Iran and we're now at war with Iran and Iranians are dying. Look at his reaction.
Look what we've done here.
I know.
I almost cried.
Yeah.
I mean, like, how long have we been pushing this?
I mean, you've been pushing this for years, right?
Right. It's here. I talked to Trump this morning.
It's literally...
Oh, he's jacked. Yeah. It's the best thing I've ever done. He loves blowing stuff up.
So happy. People are dying. People are... Yeah, 180 little girls are about to be killed. He wants to cry because he's so happy. He's been pushing to make this happen for how long now? You know, he says... But has he really been pushing for it, or has somebody else been paying him, telling him to push for it, right? Because this is the question we have to ask ourselves as Americans, right? Is it being done for us, or is it being done for another reason? I'm kind of thinking we already know the answer to that question, or at least it seems like, according to the polls, 60-70% of Americans think they know the answer to that question. This next thing I'm going to show you has also never been seen before. It's a videotape of Graham on the phone with Mr. Netanyahu, where the Israeli prime minister is telling Graham what to tell Trump. Sounds an awful lot like he's giving him instructions. The question on the table, right, as the phone call begins is, should the United States put its emphasis on Lebanon or on Iran? Lebanon or Iran? And then Graham tells them what they think they should do. Netanyahu says, no, here's what we're going to do. Listen. Here it is.
Do you have it on speaker, Ryan?
Yep, we're good.
Okay, all right, connecting you now.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, baby, Lindsey.
Hey, Lindsey. How are you?
I'm just so impressed. Glad to be your friend.
I'm glad you are my friend.
I'm going to meet with the president this weekend. I'm going down to Doral. I'm going to try to get him to join with y'all in Lebanon to maybe fly some with you. Would you like that?
Yeah, I get that. I think you have a point, but I've been thinking about the other side of it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We're concentrating right now on Iran. If we tell Hezbollah that we're going all the way, we threaten them. But if we actually do it,
okay,
then they have no reason not to go all the way against us. And right
okay
now, that's not our interest. We
okay
can do it later.
Well, that's actually good counsel. I'll put it out there as an idea. We can always go back to it.
Oh, okay. Well, we can always go back to it. We'll do what you say, Mr. Netanyahu. Okay, so I got that. Bomb Iran first, and then maybe later we can always go back and bomb... This is the prime minister of another country telling a senator who's about to meet with the president what he wants him to do. Just think about that for a minute. Who the hell's in charge? Who the hell's in charge? Who's calling the shots? It's not hard to tell, is it, when you listen to this? And can you tell from Graham's demeanor who he really answers to? Do you see how giddy he was? Hey, baby. Baby, what up, baby, my man? Like, I don't know. It just, I don't know. I'm watching that and I'm thinking, God, it just, it's so telling, right? He seems so weak. So like he's not in charge of what he's really doing. He comes to me, I don't know, maybe not to you, but he kind of comes across as a lapdog in that conversation. Like, which is the world power and which is the country the size of half of New Jersey? Which one? The one where Bibi's talking him from, or the one that this guy is standing in the capital of? Isn't that a good question? By the way, this video is from 400 hours of different videos that have been shot by some guy who's a British producer. He came to the United States, somehow coaxed this guy into saying, I'm going to make you famous. We're going to do a documentary about how cool and how brazen you are. Little did he know that he would die. The video is now being released right after Graham's death. And there's nothing Graham can do to stop it because he loses, obviously, and, you know, the fact that he's died means that he can't have any actions against it now. So the guy owns the videos scot-free. He can play them, put them on wherever the hell he wants, and he's playing them. People are looking at this stuff. I mean, and these interactions, in many ways, I think, between U.S. and Israeli officials with Graham in the middle are so incredibly telling. When we come back, here's what we're going to do. We're going to go back and talk about what's happening in the United States of America, which, like I said, is a country so damn chock full of virtues, it's ridiculous, while at the same time, there's a lot of people who are working to make it virtue less, I think. Why? Talk about the revealing videos of Lindsey Graham. We're going to do this with somebody who I think is going to be able to be very helpful in this discussion. Natalie Morris of Redacted fame, as in the podcast that reaches some 2.5 million subscribers. Not for nothing, as they say. She's going to be joining us here after the break to talk about things in America. We'll be right back. I got to tell you, I'm fascinated by some of these videos that are coming out of Lindsey Graham before he died. And joining us now to talk about this and other topics is Natalie Morris. She's the co-host of Redacted. It's so great to see you. You're so kind to take some time to join us.
Oh, thank you. You're generous with your time often, and I just want to reciprocate.
That's so.
Thank you so much for the invitation.
That's nice. Hey, let's start with this Lindsey Graham thing, because, man, I'm looking at this thing, you know, Natalie, and I'm thinking to myself, it is so telling about who he is and what he was doing and why he was doing. The sense of familiarity in his conversation with Bibi Netanyahu, the way you can tell he's trying to impress him, the way I get a sense that he's almost taking orders from him and wants him to know that he's there to serve. Here, let play this thing, Gene, if you could.
Do you have it on speaker, Ryan?
Yep, we're good.
Okay, all right, connecting you now.
Yeah.
Hello.
Hey, baby, Lindsey.
Hey, Lindsey. How are you?
I'm just so impressed. Glad to be your friend.
I'm glad you are my friend.
I'm going to meet with the president this weekend. I'm going down to Doral. I'm going to try to get him to join with y'all in Lebanon to maybe fly some with you. Would you like that?
Yeah, I get that. I think you have a point, but I've been thinking about the other side of it for a second.
Mm-hmm.
We're concentrating right now on Iran. If we tell Hezbollah that we're going all the way, we threaten them. But if we actually do it,
okay,
then they have no reason not to go all the way against us. And right
okay.
now, that's not our interest. We
okay.
can do it later.
Well, I'll okay. Well, that's actually good counsel. I'll put it out there as an idea. We can always go back to it.
Yes, sir. Whatever you want to do, sir. I mean, that's the sense I get from it. A guy from a country that's half the size of New Jersey telling a superpower, here's what I want you guys to do. We're going to go into Iran. Then later we'll go into Lebanon. How'd you hear it?
It's so sinister, and I'm racking my brain if I've ever seen anything like it. I sort of remembered the call that Justin Trudeau had with Zelensky when the war in Ukraine broke out and,
yeah.
you know, NATO members are meeting and salivating over the popularity of Zelensky and how they can continue mm-hmm. to sell the war to us. And they were they were conciliatory. They were, you know, flattering to Zelensky, but they were not taking orders from him. So I don't know that I've ever seen anything quite so obvious. It almost feels insulting how obvious it is. And the fact that he would have the brass to do it on camera.
Yes.
These are the kind of things that you would think happen in underground messaging systems, you know, because it is against his oath of office to take orders from a foreign leader and then admit to trying to bend the will of the president to what that foreign leader wants and present yourself as the go-between. I really don't understand why you would do it so blatantly, but he did. And just this week, we saw the Department of War rename an American military base after Lindsey Graham. And I thought to myself, how insulting to have to report to a base as a service member that's named after someone who never saw a war that he didn't want to send soldiers into, never served himself, but always was willing to send other people's families and family members into combat. And I wondered if we will be allowed to know that generations from now. And who, you know, what bases are named after similar people that maybe we just don't know about because time has passed. But it's extremely unsettling to think of people reporting to this base, you know, named after someone who really had no regard for their lives.
No, I mean, he has regard for Israel, it seems to me. In fact, it seemed to me from listening to that conversation, much of what we do, you've been a journalist most of your life and covered it both on the print side, on television, and now you're doing something which gets you probably more viewers than you ever did before, and surprisingly, for both of us in many ways. But my instinct as I listen to that is that this guy, Netanyahu, feels like he could just pick up the phone and probably does and call the United States and talk to whoever the hell he wants to whenever he wants. It didn't seem like a head of state in a formal conversation. It was like, hey, what's up? Yeah, here's what I need you to do today. Didn't it?
Yeah. He almost sounded impatient, like, this is what we do. Yes. You know, it was very top down.
Yes.
You know, he didn't seem, you know, Lindsey Graham is nervous and a little bit sweaty and excited. And Netanyahu is very mob boss. Like, what do you have to report to me today? Now get back. It's very pimp-like, don't you think?
Mob boss. You're so perfect.
As mixed metaphors, but the pimp.
Yeah.
Feels appropriate.
I had a professor in college that used to mark up my paper. You probably had one of these guys, too, and he was right. WC, word choice, you know? And he'd put word choice smile or word choice frown. That's a word choice smile, okay?
Okay, yeah. Thank you.
It's mob boss, Natalie. I mean, it's like, it's so sad to think that a guy like that can have such dominion over a country like ours. I had Tucker on yesterday for an hour, and we were talking about this on the show, and it's very unsettling. The good news is, thanks to you, thanks to your partner in crime, your husband and Tucker and a lot of other people out there, I'm seeing for the first time that Americans are getting that, and they're starting to ask the big question, which is, why not me? Why not us? When are you going to do stuff for us, and when are you going to stop doing stuff for, name your country, Ukraine, Egypt, Israel, et cetera, right? That's happening.
Yeah, NATO. Why are we funding NATO armies? Why this? Why that? But I'm struggling recently with how much it matters because we can see it. We can know it. We do now. And it's been this bad for decades, but a lot of us sort of missed it in the ruse of partisan politics. Yeah. But, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot. Every dystopic novel that shows that the elites are in control and the powerless are eating slop and wearing gray. They know it. They know they have no power to change it. And that is the eventuality of ultimate power of the elites. And so now we are living in the Hunger Games because there's plenty of food at the White House and Mar-a-Lago. And for the elites, there is no food for the soldiers that are serving in the Middle East right now. And we can't change it. We're having these discussions about Del Taco and burritos and that we should just be happy with what we've got. And we cannot change it. So once we get to this sort of living on Star Wars credits, we know it. They've broken us completely because we know it and we accept it and there's nothing we can do. And it feels like I said, I just 1984, Hunger Games, Star Wars, like we're here now. We're to the point where we are highly aware of the power that we don't have. We see the elites, you know, sending us to war, changing the narrative. Yeah. It's happening. We're living it. And I think that the fact that we know it collectively may or may not be encouraging, because it's kind of supposed to be that way.
It's the perception that eventually leads to change, right? I mean, it's the perception of a dysfunction that causes the change. I mean, if you study the great revolutions of our times, or not our times, but of the world, the French Revolution comes to mind. They just pushed the people into nothingness for so long and so hard, yeah, that eventually the people rose up. And I'm not saying I don't want a revolution in the United States. I don't want anybody to die. I don't want people to kill themselves on the streets. But there does seem to be an awakening of sorts where people will eventually start holding these people to account, because there's so few of them and so many of us, right?
Right. And so they have violated the social contract of government. We pay into them. For what? For protection, for local services, for the social contract that we take care of our own, that we have infrastructure in our own cities and towns and, yeah, states, and we don't have it. And so how long until we stop, until we say, you can't, we won't pay for this anymore? But the problem is that most Americans are W-2 employees, and the government can reach into their paycheck, whether they voluntarily pay taxes on April 15th or not, there's still a system in which they can scoop out of what all of us are making, and that makes us slaves. And so what is the thing that we will refuse? Can we collectively say we don't file our taxes? I don't know. Like, that seems to me a peaceful revolution, but who knows, right? Can we collectively say we do not submit to a draft?
Yeah.
You know, something that you said you spoke to Tucker. Tucker said on our show, no one's going to go if there's a draft. But we have a forceful military that may, in fact, enforce it. Look what's happening in Ukraine, where they have a weak military, but still are able to grab people off the streets and throw them to their deaths.
But it's not
unusual to think of this.
I would go. I mean, I'm too old to do anything, and, you know, a little over the hill. But I would encourage my sons to go if I felt it was a just cause and my country was being attacked or threatened in some way.
Mm-hmm.
My country was not threatened by Syria or by Libya or by Iraq or really by Afghanistan, and certainly not by Iran. So if you ask me, would you send your sons to die in those countries? I would say no, right? I mean, who wouldn't?
Sure. Well, that's where a false flag becomes very useful. How many people were motivated after 9/11 to enlist? And that's where we have to be careful, because if the narrative is not working, action may work. And again, the problem is most of us may or may not believe it, but absolutely not. And in fact, you know, our actions overseas have a reverberation here. One of the media narratives that really opened my eyes to how much they lie to us was the Pulse nightclub shooting in Orlando, because mm-hmm. the media will still frame this as, you know, a shooting of homophobia, some Arab who was upset about Western culture. It wasn't that at all. In fact, he told his hostages, I'm doing this because you guys won't stop bombing us in the Middle East. This is a consequence of the fact that I have to live through drone strikes, weddings, funerals, schools. And I want Americans to see what this feels like. We did not get to see what this feels like because the media changed the narrative in a useful way to pretend that we are the victim of homophobia. And so we don't see that our actions have consequences, how often it is that we kill civilians. And then when it comes home to roost, it's hidden from us.
With that said, let me play someone you very well know. Her name is Nancy Mace. She's a member of Congress, and she said this the other day on camera, no less. Play it.
I want to ask you about something you posted online. A few days ago, you wrote, quote, every single Muslim holding public office in America is a Trojan horse and a threat to both national security and our republic. And then today you essentially added, if not wanting to be blown up, stabbed, or rammed by a car, by a radical Islamist in the United States of America makes us Islamophobes, then so be it. Are you saying that anyone who is Muslim is a threat to this country?
That's not what I said, and that's not what I said.
That's exactly what she said. Is it a coincidence that when I looked her up, I found out that she gets a ton of money from AIPAC? Is it a coincidence that she's saying that while she's also getting that money from AIPAC?
Most likely not. No. And again, it's an obvious playbook. We saw in the last maybe 2 or 3 years that anytime there's this, you know, campaign that comes out of any kind of Zionist aligned politician, it is deflect at how bad Muslims are so that they don't understand or don't focus on what is actually happening out of the state of Israel. And so, no, this invitation for Islamophobia has been ramped up on X. I'm sure you've seen it. It's really blatant. It's like, you know, they're in your cities. They're doing all this stuff. You don't know, you know, be afraid of mosques, all of this. But again, it's not most people's everyday experience. And the fact that we are starting to realize that endless wars and endless debt is in fact making our everyday experience a living hell, we're not supposed to notice that. That is something, you know, it's really working against this messaging, but we're here, we're talking about it. So that's, as long as we're allowed to.
I get smarter the more I talk to people from around the world and the more I travel. And one of the things, if I could get my show back on CNN, right? Not that I would want it, but if I were back on CNN, one of the messages I would want to tell the viewers on CNN is, did you know that your hundreds of billions of dollars are going to Ukraine and are going to Israel and are going to all these countries? And if you were to look up what benefits those people have in those countries, they have more benefits than you do. Did you know, Mr. or Mrs. America, for example, that if you are a woman and you get pregnant, you get maternity leave paid for sometimes as much as a year in those countries because they want you to be able to spend time with your child and not have to run back to work? We don't have that in America. In those countries that we're paying our money to, they have a healthcare system that blows ours away because they don't start you at 65. They start you at like 13 or something like that, right? And in those countries, you're guaranteed overtime pay. We don't have that in our country. So we're giving hundreds of billions. You are giving, I would say, if I was back, you are giving hundreds of billions of dollars to these countries who have things you don't have. How does that make you feel? But Americans don't know this. They don't.
They don't. And, you know, we lived in Portugal for 5 years, and the European Union has a lot of benefits because we pay for their military because of NATO. And so President Trump last year went to NATO and said, you all have to start spending more. It was a spreadsheet trick. They're not actually going to do it. And we are going to continue to fund their militaries, and they are going to continue to up this Russophobia so that they can get their war with Russia. And we're on the hook for it. And, you know, something that was really upsetting to me as an American is there's a lot of anti-American sentiment. You're stupid. You guys are, you know, you consume a lot. You're fat. You like air conditioning and ice cubes and things like
that. What's wrong with that?
You know, right. Exactly. We like comforts. But at the same time, they don't realize that a lot of their lifestyle is paid for on our paycheck. And it's really upsetting because they have fantastic, I really miss my healthcare in Portugal. They have really affordable, fantastic healthcare.
Yes.
And yet they don't realize it's because they don't have to pay for their own military. They don't have a big military, but at the same time, most of that budget is funneled through NATO, which is paid for by us. So you're absolutely right. You know, the problem was, and it's not like I expected Europeans to thank me. It's not something that I would otherwise do. But at the same time, you know, this sort of disdain for American lifestyle persists at the same time where there is a dependency that we have not agreed to.
Yeah. If we pay the bill for their military, that means they don't have to, which means then they can spend on their social programs that we don't have there. Could I have said
it
any
better? And then sort of look down on us for not having it. You know, oh, it's so expensive to take an ambulance in America. It is. And that's not our choice. We haven't designed this system. We don't have consent. into the system that we have. We're just as upset about it as you are, but you'd be pretty upset if you had to funnel your tax dollars into your military like we do and then not have these benefits.
This is what is so frustrating. You just hit on something which I think is fascinating, and you mentioned Mr. Trump, our president, right? And he was spot on that, right? Like, he's been spot on a lot of things in words, not in deeds, yeah. Right? He said he was going to do this. He didn't. He said so many things that made so much sense that make people go, you know what? I think I want to go ahead and take a chance on this guy. I know he's a little weird, does a lot of bizarre stuff, and can't exactly want my kids to grow up being like him. But you know what? If he's willing to do that stuff and he's got my vote. But then he gets into office and he's no different than the other guys. What happens? Yeah. What's with that?
I mean, your guess is as good as mine. You know, I don't have Trump derangement syndrome.
No.
I don't hate him for existing. I didn't think that, you know, when I watched the debates between him and Joe Biden was a mess, but I was listening to what President Trump said. And the way he described the war in Ukraine was a lie. He said Putin wouldn't have done it if I was in office. Yeah. Okay. Putin did not personally decide. He took it to Parliament. It was he's still going with this unprovoked Putin provocation, whatever the alliteration is. You know, so I knew that he wasn't willing to tell the truth, but he at least was making overtures to ending the war.
Closer
that
to
has
the,
not happened.
Closer to the truth, right, exactly. As opposed to Biden, who was saying Putin is the devil and a dictator and
right.
Whatever. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I got
and
it.
When Kamala Harris said, she was asked in a debate, what would you do about Ukraine? She said, well, I wouldn't just give it up to Russia. And I was like, who are you to decide what happens in Ukraine? It doesn't belong to us.
We shouldn't decide
at all.
I'm not going to, right. Yeah. Like, this is my pen and you can't have it. We're not talking about your pen, right? Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The people of that region voted. And she's saying, oh, no, you don't know what you want. I know what you want. Yeah. We need a war so that you stay a part of Ukraine. And so, you know, neither of them were really, in fact, tapped into what's happening in that war. But this idea, I will meet with Putin, I will end this. You know, I did put some stock in that. Hasn't happened. So is it Trump himself or is it the war machine that has prevented that eventuality?
Here's a guy you worked with, Dave Ramsey, when you were at Fox News, along with your husband and Tucker. I just captured him saying something. This is a couple of years old, but it doesn't matter because what he's talking about is not something that just happened. But listen how one of his viewers said, are you concerned? Should I be concerned as an investor in the fact that there's something called de-dollarization going on, that the world currency might soon change to not just being exclusively the dollar, but that the BRICS countries are coming together and creating their own currency? And how concerned should I be about that? That's the question. And he answers it by saying that these countries, China, India, Russia, for example, are just little tiny countries with no power, no GDP. But listen to how he describes Russia.
When you look at the math, it's humorous. I mean, and Russia, we always think of as like, you know, in the Rocky movies or something, like they're going to come bomb the United States or whatever and all this stuff. But when you look at even though it's a huge landmass, their economic production is pitiful. It's pitiful. Because communism sucks. And so it just doesn't create a lot of gross domestic product.
He's 100% wrong on GDP. Russia's fourth in the world. They're way ahead of most European countries. They're way ahead on GDP growth. And by the way, Russia's not a communist country. What?
Right. And it seems a little bit ignorant because Russia has not been allowed to build up a debt-based economy because of international sanctions.
Yeah.
So their GDP is actually based on things, production, work, whereas ours is sort of based on a myth, debt, the petrodollar, which we see faltering day by day because we're losing the global hegemony. But also, I see this messaging coming out of the White House. I see it coming out of the warmongers is increasingly that communism's terrible. You know, it's the number one threat to humanity. And what they're trying to sell us is this idea that capitalism is amazing. Well, we actually don't know that. We don't know if capitalism is amazing. I'm not promoting socialism, but our version of capitalism is based on global hegemony.
Yeah.
You know, I was reading a book this weekend about Nicaragua and how in the 1850s, the United States went to war in Nicaragua in order to establish a trade route for Cornelius Vanderbilt. Mm-hmm. And that is now what we call capital, the Vanderbilts, the Rockefellers. Well, they didn't just do this, you know, on their own because capitalism is amazing. They were able to use the military might of the United States in order to establish their global hegemony. So we actually don't know what we're capable of in terms of capitalism. And again, because we're working, because the government can just scoop into our paychecks. And when they do that, it devalues the dollars that we have made. We really don't know what we're, what we could do as a society. I think we very much would like to find out. I feel a lot like, you know, those Nepo babies whose parents got them into Ivy League schools and they had not deserved it. That's a little bit how I feel. Like, I probably, we probably collectively are able to do a lot. I'm sure we could. I really believe in the American spirit, but we are not able to know. We just don't know because, you know, the petrodollar was negotiated with Saudi Arabia after the United States had agreed that they wouldn't do it. They did it anyway. So we are constantly cheating. We are constantly creating advantages for the elites that the rest of us don't have. So we can't buy this capitalism is better because we honestly just are not living that reality.
I would even go a step further, Natalie. I would argue that our capitalism is a form of communism. Because when you subsidize a huge corporation and say, essentially, you don't have to pay taxes on your goods, as we do, and we're going to give you an allotment of sales in a certain country because we're going to take care of it for you, which we do, right, with even the biggest companies in the world, like Monsanto. We subsidize them. What is a subsidy? It's state money being poured into a private company, which means it's not really capitalism. If it's not a private company, they're not doing it on their own. They're doing it with the government's help. But when China does this, we, oh, communists or whatever. But when we do it, we call it what? I don't know. Strategic form of capitalism or something? It's not. It's cronyism, isn't it?
Well, right. And we run cover to prevent the consequences of capitalism. We had Chris Martinson on our show yesterday, and he said, you know, capitalism would allow Pfizer to go bankrupt if they hurt people. But they cannot do that because the government has passed laws to protect them and give them, you know, legal protection in a ways that most people don't have.
Yeah.
And so we saw that over and over again during the pandemic. We saw that during the 2008 bailouts. How can we promote capitalism right now when we really can't see it happening? I mean, you know, I do believe I'm not one of those who would wear a shirt from Target that says capitalism is the patriarchy or whatever, right? I don't believe that. No. I'm just saying we have not been allowed to actually succeed.
I think in the end, and people like you and me, we probably agree on this because we've been around the block a few times. The virtue of a country is its ability to serve its people, not its label, not its name. None of those things. It's ability. If enough people feel like the people who lead them are actually thinking about them when they make decisions, that's a good country. If you go to a place and you ask the people and, I don't know, 70-80% of them say, yeah, I got problems with him, this dude Putin or this guy Xi or this guy Modi or this guy Trump or whoever it is. But generally speaking, I think he's doing things for me. I think that's what it, in the end it's all about. And I think of all in my travels, as I look at countries, I think our country, yours and mine, is probably one that's least able to say it's doing that these days. And I'm not talking about Trump. I'm talking about the whole shebang for like the past 20 years.
Yes, absolutely. But do you think there are countries, I mean, you know, a lot of Americans either move to Canada or they move to Europe thinking that that's what they're going to get. And then they realize they have it worse.
Yeah.
Or maybe they don't realize, but they're just kind of, you know, expat weirdos. And like, everything's great here. Right. But do you think that there has existed a government like that?
No.
Or exists a government like that now? Because what we think of, we know that Russians have a high satisfaction with their government, high approval rating of Putin. I think Chinese understand that Xi Jinping is trying to lift all boats.
Mm-hmm. Modi.
But I don't. Yeah, I don't know. Do you think that there is sort of higher levels of satisfaction with governments?
I do.
In the East?
I do, but mm-hmm. I think it comes in spells, and I think some of it has to do with where they are right now in the growth of a country. For example, in Russia, when I walk around and I talk to people in Russia, I get a feeling that they're hopeful. They're what we used to be like in the 50s and 60s. They want to build a family. They can't wait to start a business. They're doing all these things that we were like giddy about doing in the past in America and not feeling weighed down like I feel like many Americans do right now. I'm not sure why that is. I think Putin's actions in the 1990s, where he kicked out all the bad people and the oligarchs and started making people pay taxes, which is something I wish we would do with our oligarchs in America, may have had a lot to do with that. I don't know how long it's going to last, but it may have had a lot to do with that feeling. That's my take. Not that I'm an expert on this stuff, but what do you think?
Right. Well, I mean, I'm in an existential crisis because the more I see, the more I'm disappointed.
Yeah.
And so I've been like, is there spiritual warfare that's going to save us? Will it be, a nation-based revolution? Will AI save us? Will the aliens? Like, I'm just looking everywhere. Like, okay, something's got to give here. I don't know exactly what it is, but I feel like I do not resent people for wanting to have affordability. I really like young people. Yes. I want their future to be better. I don't want them to look back and see that my generation slept through it and didn't leave them a good world. And so, yeah, I don't know what the solution is, but you and I think, well, we don't run for office. We just poke holes in the narratives that are lies.
That's our job.
But we're not here to solve it. It's not really our job.
To think through it and try and bring the right people to the table to hear conversations that can make a difference. And that's the only thing we can do, especially in this new alternative universe that is media, which you inhabit and so do I. And like we said at the beginning, I'm not sure I'd want to work for CNN anymore. I don't think they're capable.
Oh, gosh, no. Once you start to see it like the Matrix, like you can see it in binary lies, 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 lies. Right.
It is.
And you couldn't step back into that. There's no way you could do it. You would almost short circuit. Right. I mean, we believed it maybe at the time that our networks had power, and maybe when I believed in partisan politics and, we're doing right and they're doing wrong kind of thing. But no, I wouldn't want anything to do with that anymore. I'm super grateful.
You guys do a great job. I'm so happy I had a chance to talk to you. You're so smart. And what's great? I mean, I just feel like this conversation you and I had, we were like having a cup of coffee, waking up in the morning and saying, hey, let's talk about the world. And it just kind of, one idea came out of the other. We have to do this
again. I'm really grateful for it. What we do can be lonely. Like, we just sit in our basement. it's just my husband and I. So I'm really proud to call you a contemporary.
Thanks. That's nice. Tell him I said hi. I love him. He is just the man. And you know what? When he gets together with Tucker, they do this thing that you and I just did today. Just spitballing ideas,
Yeah. They have a good chemistry, a good camaraderie. And that's a really valuable friendship for my husband, too, because, like I said, sometimes what we do can be isolating or scary. And so
we all call
people like you a contemporary is confidence boosting. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
It's not nothing.
That's so nice. Appreciate it. God bless. That's nice to hear. And we all come from the same world. The CNNs and the Foxes, et cetera, et cetera. So we've got that heartache as well. Thanks, Nat. You're the best. Fantastic. Really appreciate the conversation.
See you next time.
All right. Well, that's it for us. Boy, I could have gone on forever. She's delightful and smart and kind and thinking and cogent and wow. Hey, you can find us on X. This is going to be there. I was just noticing the conversation with Tucker's all over X, and people are commenting like crazy. Some people didn't like what he said. Some people liked what he said. We're on Spotify. We're on YouTube somehow. We don't put the stuff there, but everybody else does. We're on BitChute. BitChute's my favorite because no cancellations there, none. No demonetizations. Your stuff doesn't disappear. I'll be looking for you next time. Thank you so much for letting us into your homes. Good night.